Shot at Love.
I'm Carrie Brett, and this is Shot at Love. I'm so excited about this week's guest, Zivi Owens, who's superhuman and such an inspiration. At age 40, she found herself crying in the shower, divorced with four kids, until her life started over when she found love with Kyle Owens, a former tennis pro and film producer, then later married him on a tennis court. During those years, her therapist gave Zivi the advice to read a book when she felt lonely when her kids were with their dad. Zivi not only took that advice, but created the podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books, one of the top literary podcasts in the world, and in 3 years interviewed 600 authors. This month, she published the quarantine anthology, Moms Don't Have Time To, a moving collection of excellent essays. When we come back, Zivi will show us that we do have time to do anything we want, especially finding love. You won't want to miss it, so stay tuned. Zivi Owens is the creator of the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. She was named NYC's most powerful book influencer by Vulture. Oprah Winfrey's O Magazine named her one of the top literary podcasts twice. During the quarantine, Zivi hosted two Instagram Live author talk shows, launched an online magazine with essays called We Found Time, and started Zivi's virtual book club. Zivi has recommended books for The Washington Post, Good Morning America, and Real Simple. She has also contributed to Parents, Marie Claire, Redbook, and New York Times Online. She's appeared on CBS This Morning, Good Morning America, the BBC, ABC, ABC 7 Eyewitness News, Good Day LA, Good Day DC, Good Day Dallas. She has two children's books coming out in 2022, plus a second anthology coming out in November of 2021 called Moms Also Don't Have Time To. Zivi recently launched an Instagram community and a podcast called Moms Don't Have Time to Lose Weight. She's a graduate of Yale University and Harvard Business School. Welcome, Zivi.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited about this. I'm really glad that we had a deadline because your bio and what you've done is unbelievable. You're just a high achieving person. And I'm glad that I had that deadline because I was like, this is so much research.
Well, I'm sorry. You could have just, made something up and it would have been fine. So.
Well, when I first wrote you on Instagram, I think I said something like, how have you interviewed 600 people in a year? You're like, LOL, it was 3 years. I'm like, all right, now I feel a little bit better because I literally thought you did that. So this week's episode, I'm going to focus on how we can not feel lonely. And I think we should all follow Zivi's lead and do what we can to help others who are suffering. So Zivi, you are busy, but aside from being busy, you are a force for good, which I absolutely love. During the pandemic, you went into overdrive to shine the light on authors and new books coming out that lost their ability to be out promoting and selling their books. Your support was critical at the time when bookstores were shut down and book tours canceled. It was also important that you published your new book, A Quarantine Anthology, at a time we needed to connect more than ever. Zivi, how do you do it all?
I don't know. I don't know. People are now starting to ask me this a lot, and I don't know. Basically, I do stuff all the time. So if I do it, I'm like all in and I do it start to finish and then I move on. Like I was literally just making cake pops with my son downstairs before we got on the phone. And I'm like, I have 40 minutes. We are going to finish making the cake pops. And then I come up and I do this and I like only focus on this and then I move on to the next. So I don't know. I just have so much energy because everything I'm doing is coming from a place of like passion and joy. So when you're really excited about something, you do more of it without even thinking about it. And that's sort of what it's like for me. Like if you're, I don't know, I'm trying to think of other hobbies or something that you could be like, you love photography, right? Like you probably don't even think about it. You just like fit it in because you love it. So I don't
know. It's true. Because I ran a full-time business. And then I also worked for the leading magazine in Boston. And people would say, you put so much time into these covers, Carrie. you're not making the money for the time. And I just mm-hmm. had to say, well, it's my hobby to justify yeah. it, because I did love it and I still love it, but I love podcasting. And that's why I think I'm so excited for you, because I don't know how you do as many episodes as you do. That's fascinating to me. I don't know how you read as much as you do, but it just shows that you do have that passion and drive, that you're just super excited about the authors that you interview. And but this all kind of happened right around the time that you found love, right? Like you decided.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. It's no accident at all. In fact, the other day I was like, you know, I'm becoming my husband's personality. I feel like you're with somebody so much, you kind of adopt some of their mannerisms or something. I was like, what if I'm accidentally impersonating my husband, who I think is like the coolest person alive?
Right.
When I got remarried and basically when I fell in love again after my divorce, I tapped into sort of the part of myself that I hadn't been in touch with in quite some time, and like all this creative energy and all of it came like pouring out. And it was my husband Kyle who encouraged me to do all of it. In fact, still does, like every day. So I don't think I would be, I mean, there's just no way I wouldn't have been able to do any of it. And he was the one originally who was like, why don't you take all your parenting essays and make them into a book? And I was like, moms don't have time to read books. And that just like started the whole thing.
Well, you know, I was listening to Ellen Hildebrand's episode on your show, and I thought, wow, she has so many books, and she's so well-known in our area and all over, but her first book got rejected. And what if she stopped? You know, like, what if she stopped at that first rejection? And I actually wrote a book myself, and I haven't published it yet, but the book led me to the podcast. So the same thing happened to me. Yeah. And so I am trying to teach myself to be a writer, and I'm learning, and I've been rewriting, and writing these podcasts every week has been helping me too. So you can do anything, and you can find the time for anything you really want to do if you want to do it bad enough. But yep. One of the episodes that you were on, you said, you ask people questions of things that, you know, you're interested in, and you're always interested in like people's backstory. So I'm interested in how you were not trying to find love, but you ended up, you know, essentially marrying your son's tennis pro.
Well, he wasn't even really my son's pro. Okay, so what happened is I had been married for 10 years, and I'm not going to talk about that relationship
yep.
for many reasons, but let me just say that, like, you know, like most relationships that end in divorce, obviously there was some flaw to it, right? So I had been married for 10 years, and I had just had my fourth child. And nothing, just to preface the story to not make it sound like I'm a horrendous person, nothing happened at this meeting. I'm just going to describe the meeting, which was only a meeting.
This is shot at love, so there's no judgment here anyways.
I know, but okay, I was just, you know, not to say I'm, well, anyway. I had twins at the time who were 7 and a half, and I had a 17-month-old daughter as well. And I had just had another baby, and my last two kids were blessings, but unexpected blessings. Ones I badly wanted, but I just didn't think I would be able to have more kids. So I had this baby who was 2 weeks old, and I had to get my older son out of the house because, you know, 7 and a half-year-old boy, he just had to get his energy out. And I had been making him play tennis because I love tennis. And I was like, you guys have to play tennis. It's the dead of winter. There's no way else. You know, he loved football, but... well, where was he going to play football aside from like in our basement? So I dragged him kicking and screaming essentially to play tennis. And the only way I got him there is because he loved his teacher so much. This man named Fabio, who half the time just like, you know, tried to pound him with tennis balls while he ran around, and they just had fun together. And frankly, that was fine. You know, he was on the court. He was doing something. He was getting his energy out. So when we got there that day, Fabio wasn't there. And instead this other man there, and he was like, hey, I'm Kyle, I'm gonna be teaching Owen's lesson today. And I was like, what do you mean? And I'm thinking to myself, like, for anybody out there who has kids and who has ever pushed them to do something they don't want to do with like one positive, and then the one positive ends, you know, you're like in serious trouble. So I was not happy about that. I was like, no one called me. What's going on? And anyway, he took my son out onto the tennis court begrudgingly. And I was, meanwhile, so excited just to sit for 30 minutes and like read a newspaper. Okay. And just have that time, which I had been like counting down to and like preparing to savor. And so they go out onto the court, and there's like this glass kind of partition, so you can see the people on the court. And about 10 minutes later, the receptionist is like, he's, you know, Kyle's calling you from the court. And I was like, what? And then I thought, oh, my son already got in trouble. What happened? So I have to like get up and like go into the bubble with like all the people, all these tennis balls like everywhere. And I go on the court, and he was like, oh, you know, hey, your son, he really doesn't like tennis. And I was like, yeah, I know. And he's like, yeah, he really likes football. I was like, I know. As if I don't know my son. I was like, I know that. And he's like, well, I don't really think he should be taking tennis lessons. And I was like, well, I do. And he's like, well, he's not going to be taking tennis lessons from me.
Right.
Oh, and I was like, what? I'm like, who are you? What on earth? Anyway, so I was nothing but annoyed. And then I realized I'd like paid for all these lessons and all this stuff, and Fabio was going to be gone. Anyway, it came up that like maybe eventually I would have to take some of these lessons. And then we started playing tennis. So he ended up not really being his teacher, but then he ended up being my teacher.
It's such a nice story. It really is. I love it. And it gives so many people hope who have multiple children and are looking to start over. You know, it's a hard place to be. And I know my whole world opened up when I joined Tinder, and and that created Shot at, you know, led to creating Shot at Love. And I love how you were giving a speech at your kid's school about how you found your voice through writing. And there were, thankfully, and I know there's like, just like the blessing that you met Kyle, like that piece was supposed to be there so that you could be this superhuman person that you are and literally save the literary world single-handedly. So it was all part of the plan. But I love that when you got up to speak at the school, there was a best-selling author in the audience, and she was like, we got to talk. Like, you have something here. She said, you know, you should start a podcast. And at the time, you weren't even on Instagram, and you only, right, you only knew two authors. I think it's so great that you found a way to get in touch with Andre Agassi because you had just sat next to him on a plane, and he came on as one of your first guests.
It was actually, yeah, it was my tennis. So Kyle, my husband, used to teach with a man named Murphy Jensen, who is a French Open champion in doubles from a while ago. And he had just sat next to Andre Agassi on the plane. So I was like, And I overheard Murphy telling Kyle, yeah, I guess he was next to me on the plane. And from the background, I was like, you think he'd want to be on my podcast? And he was like, I can ask. And then he said, yes. I couldn't believe it.
Wow. But you took that chance, you know?
Like, yeah. Why not?
I had a funny story one time. I was flying to Florida, and I was going off at the time to my boyfriend. I was saying, you know, Ben Affleck just got robbed of Best Director, and I was so mad. And I knew Ben and Matt from, well, they're from Boston, but I had covered their premiere, and I had done some work for them during Good Will Hunting. And I was like, I'm so mad about this. Like, Ben isn't acting right now, and he's trying to make a go as a director. And all of a sudden, the woman next to me, she goes to close her library book, and it says Damon. And I'm like, are you related to Matt Damon? She's like, I'm his aunt. We're going to Matt's house right now. And Kyle?
No way.
And Kyle, Matt's brother, is sitting right in front of you. And Kyle gets up and starts laughing. He's like, hi, nice to meet you.
My gosh.
I was mortified, but it was really funny. And I was like, well, tell Matt I said hi. And tell Ben he got robbed. But You never know who you're sitting next to sometimes on a plane, and you never know who's going to say yes to your podcast like you and have this amazing conversation. You seem like a big risk taker. Like you said earlier in this podcast, you just go for it. You don't overthink it. And I think there's a lot to be learned there, especially for online dating. I know you didn't online date, but I want to use the analogy of you always have a book in hand. You know, you are, and with four children, you're always waiting, whether it's at the doctor's office or anywhere, you know, in the car, wherever they're going, you can read a few pages. And I feel the same is for these dating apps, that mothers, working mothers, they'll say, I just don't have time to do that. But you can find time. And I think you're perfect, you know, someone who can show us a way with that.
You know, I don't view them really as risks, because they don't seem like there's not a lot of downside to some of the things that I try. Like, what's the downside? Like, I'm like, well, let's start this podcast. Let's start another podcast and see if that works. And then if it doesn't, I'm like, all right, that's not working. Like, moving on. Right. And so I don't know. It doesn't feel risky to me. I don't know. It doesn't feel risky.
Well, do you?
And it's not like I had a whole big strategy that involved taking risks. Like, I'm just really like doing what feels right next, and then seeing if it works or seeing if it doesn't work, which is probably not the best way to run a business. I don't know. I'm just sort of doing whatever. I mean, that sounds, I think it through, obviously, and I'm like analyze it somewhat, but I don't know. It's more like how it feels.
Right. And you don't need to figure it all out. Like, I listened to your episode that you interviewed your dad, because I followed in my dad's footsteps, and he's a photographer as well. And he's my barometer, and I've learned an awful lot from my dad. So I was interested to hear the conversation with your dad. And your dad said, in business, you have the vision. And if you stay with that vision, and then you kind of, if the vision is strong, then you can figure it out, you know? So yeah. The idea, you had that idea. Moms don't have time to read books. And that way you could review a book, or we didn't have to miss out on all these wonderful authors, especially now with COVID, because of this podcast. So I'm someone who actually loves to read, and I loved to read as a child, but my eyes are so tired at the end of the day from shooting and editing that I've moved away from, I listen to a ton of audiobooks, but reading your book, because I haven't actually read a book, physically held it in my hand, I took those words in differently. I really did, especially someone who's trying to learn how to write, or teaching myself how to write. The structure and just seeing those physical words printed. I know you're someone who favors for the book versus audio, right?
I love audio too. And this book will be an audiobook. It's the rights have been sold. It's just like taking a little while. I love audiobooks too. I think they're great. I just read so quickly myself that I don't like spending the time on audiobooks. But that's a lie, because when I'm out like walking my dog, or I'm taking a walk or something, if I ever do those things regularly, I do listen to audiobooks. But if I'm at home, I'd rather just read a hard copy.
Well, I think it's so good because it keeps you sharp. It keeps you learning. And that's why I listen to audiobooks, because I want to listen to every dating book there is. I love researching relationships and interpersonal relationship skills. Because I don't know, I see great value in it, and it interests me. So before COVID, you thought you were busy. You were recording five. You were recording five podcasts a week, preparing and researching. And when the pandemic hit, you doubled down on helping the literary community by bringing authors to readers. And you mentioned in your book that your goal was to help, full stop. I know your book is helping others and healing. You brainstormed about all the things moms don't have time to do, like eat, have sex, work out, breathe, especially during lockdown. What have you learned about yourself in lockdown?
First of all, again, your research is amazing. You have like, there's not much. I'm going to start coming to you for when I can't remember things about myself. What have I learned during lockdown? Oh my gosh. Well, I've learned, yeah. I mean, well, I've learned on different fronts. In terms of my kids, I've learned that I can basically ignore them and they'll be fine. No, I've learned, I've basically in every instance learned to let go a little more. I used to be really tightly wound in terms of planning. And, you know, I have this mix of sort of spontaneity, but also wanting to plan. So what I end up doing all the time is making tons of plans that I then change. When COVID hit, I realized, you know, like everyone else, my entire calendar got wiped out. And all of that time I spent planning was truly a complete waste. Not like maybe it's a waste. It was a waste. And I realized how much time I spend planning. So now I don't do that as much. I just made my first plan for the end of July. And now it's February. And I'm like, maybe we'll take that trip. We'll see. Who knows? But I don't know. So I've learned to be more easygoing in terms of, or it's not even easygoing. It's more just like letting go of the pretense of some of the things, right? Like how to spend my time and what I want to spend my time on has become very, very clear to me. And how much I enjoy what I do, how when I try one thing, another couple things become really clear, how one thing keeps leading to another, how much it makes me feel good to connect with so many people and to help them connect to each other. And doing so through books is one way, but it's the connection for me that's like the most exciting part of it all. Right. I don't know. I could go on and on. No, I've learned a lot.
Because your book, everyone's suffering within their home, whether they're alone or have families. And those walls are coming in on people. But it was so nice to be able to read essays of the struggles that all these different authors had. I just thought, I was able to see with your book, like, how touching and how I didn't feel alone and how connected I felt to all these writers, even though I didn't know them. I mean, there was one writer in the book who took David Sedaris' class.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Allie Frank.
And I took it as well, the master class. And I, like, would watch him at night, like I was a child listening to Mr. Rogers or something, like hanging on to every word. But I love David Sedaris, and I get his dark humor and his self-deprecation. And I just really gravitate to his writing style. And it's so amazing that you interviewed him, and I listened to that episode on your show. It was great. But how amazing did you ever think in your life that you'd be able to interview someone like David?
No, it was the coolest thing.
Right. So I actually,
I mean, it was just so cool.
It is so cool. So I actually wrote an essay inspired by David Sedaris. And I thought I was like the only person who ever did that. And it was like, okay, am I going to just, you know, paper a birdcage with this? Like, is anyone ever going to read this? But, you know, I could connect to different people who had also written an essay about him, you know? So I was like, I'm not the only random person out there. So
he actually, after the interview, he mailed me a postcard that he had handwritten to say thank you for my interview.
So nice.
So I framed it. And so now it's like right here next to me framed, because I'm like, that's the coolest thing that's like ever happened.
So
you
nice.
Thank me? Are you kidding? It's so crazy.
I would have framed that too.
Yeah.
You should put that on Instagram. People would be like, this is so cool.
Yeah.
So how has your life changed when you found the right partner? And you can tell just daily that he is the one for you. I have to read a few sentences that you wrote about your husband and the acknowledgments, because I thought it was so sweet. To Kyle, for literally everything, the love, the Shark Tank episodes, the emojis during the Instagram lives, the hugs, the stepfathering, the meals, you've fed my body and soul in every way since the day I met you. I am me because of you. You are it. I watch Shark Tank too with my boyfriend. So I just, those words are beautiful. So how has your life changed since you fell in love at age 40?
I just feel like, you know, I don't want to make it sound like we have this absolutely perfect situation. We still like have tiffs every so often and get annoyed or whatever, just like anybody. But he's 100% the right person. But I just didn't want to, like, I don't want people to feel like there's this like unrealistic model being set that like everything's perfect.
It's real life. It's real life.
It's real life. Yes, it's real life. And but it's been great. How have I changed? Like, since falling in love again at 40, I have changed in every way. I feel like I had really lost myself there for a long time. And I didn't feel like the real me was ever going to come back. And I had accepted a lot about that change as something that I just had to live with, right? Like, okay, this is who I've become, and that's the end of my story. And I'm just going to go along with life like this. And, you know, I was in a place where I would wake up and just start counting down to when I could go to bed again at night. You know, it's like not a good place.
It's not.
And which I'm sure so many people can relate to, especially parents of young kids, but many people in general. But, you know, I was staying at home with my kids for a long time. And as evidenced by how much I can actually accomplish when I put my mind to it, it's like I had all that energy not being used, really only being used to like schedule my twins' naps and things like that, which, not to say there's anything wrong with that, just it wasn't enough for me. It wasn't fulfilling. Like, it wasn't like checking the boxes and what I needed to feel fulfilled and happy with myself. And then when I found the right relationship, it changed me. It changed that. I meant that what I said about Kyle, because he's being with the right person has allowed me to like rebuild, and like it's changed my, like, it sounds ridiculous, but like I really feel like, you know, on like a cellular level, I just having someone who supports you, and like he'll like cook. He cooks. He like, no one had cooked for me, you know, except for one babysitter, one meal on my birthday. She like this Aww. One babysitter made me pancakes. And I remember crying thinking, gosh, like no one's done this. Like, you know, and now all of a sudden, like Kyle makes meals all the time, and he'll like bring me a nice drink or like my favorite dessert, or like, he's just so thoughtful. And I'm pretty thoughtful too, but I had just never expected to get anything like that ever back. So it's just amazing. I just feel so seen, I guess. And that makes me have the energy and the confidence to do so much, because like I have someone here in my corner being like, you've got this. And not only that, but he has like a zillion amazing ideas all the time. So, you know, everything I do, I'm like, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And he gives me ideas and I generally take them. So
that's great. That's great. Well, you mentioned in your book that when the pandemic happened, I wanted to go back to talking about, you know, so you are with Kyle and he does support you every day and he backs anything that you want to do. You know, you're like, okay, you felt very frightened, and everyone did when the pandemic first hit. And you mentioned in your book that you didn't have a medical degree, you couldn't stop the pandemic, that you couldn't make your life or anyone else's go back to normal, but you could launch an online magazine and get these essays out as quick as possible. And you believe that stories unite us and remind us that we're not alone. How gratifying was it for you to learn that We Found Time essays were helping people feel less anxious, more connected, and less lonely?
It felt amazing. It was the essays and the Instagram lives. Even on Instagram today, I posted about the fact that I have a second anthology coming out in November, and somebody new commented and said, you know, you've gotten me through the pandemic and I listen to you every day, like on my walks and this and that. And I'm so excited for this book. And now your book is good. And I'm just like, that's amazing. Like, that makes me feel amazing that these conversations that I have at my desk that I really enjoy, right, that change my day and my life and like fulfill me on a very deep level, other people also are enjoying. It's just the craziest. So it makes me feel great that I could be a friend to people in their ears during like the worst time in life and maybe give them joy, maybe help them think about something, or, you know, just make them feel more connected. And it feels great. It feels so great.
Awesome. It's worth all the hard work. Or somewhere you said, like, I'm not at home eating bonbons. And that's what I say to my dad, too, that quote, because I thought that was funny. Because I do work a lot. But at least it's purposeful. A lot of the things that I do is helping people who are single. And one of the essays from Esther
Amini
wrote the first essay in the book called Sheltering with Ghosts. And she wrote, "For me, isolation is a gift that favors art. The creative process flourishes under these circumstances. It demands looking inward and detachment from the outside world. And for me, the saving grace has been this podcast. And it's kept me focused and serving and a way to get out of my own head and put something positive in the world." Do you think that your podcast or your new book served as a creative outlet while you navigated these troubled times?
For myself, yes, 100%. And actually, I did another interview this morning with this woman named Erin Washington. Maybe you should talk to her. She was awesome. Anyway, she just wrote a book called Squats and Margaritas.
But I already love her.
Yeah, she's really awesome. Like, we finished and I wrote the publicist. I was like, I need her email. She's like my new best friend.
Wow.
But anyway, she's a podcaster too, a new podcaster. But we were both talking about, and now talking with you too, like, this is the second conversation today. Like, podcasting is so awesome. It's like this amazing way, especially for women, to connect in a new way. Because this is like, not to make gender stereotypes, and a lot of, there are obviously a lot of different formats for podcasts, but these sort of like more conversational podcasts are just like so up our alley, right?
It's
like a dream come true. So, and so easy to do. It's just, of course, women want to listen to other women talk to each other. Like, that's why you like overhear things in coffee shops and like find it so interesting. And I don't know. I just think it's
a way of like connecting people. Just like you just told me about that writer who,
yes,
it just makes our world less big. You know, it's, we're not really that far away from each other. I don't know. It just connects people that could have amazing conversations, and these conversations that potentially wouldn't have been had unless there was a podcast. So,
and like with people that aren't necessarily in your world, like that's the other thing that I've totally learned this year is that like you can find your people, but they might not be the people who you've ever interacted with in real life. Right. Like I feel like, the more people I meet through this podcast, first of all, the less original I feel like I am as a person. Like all these things in my head, like other people have the same things. Like I've met some people where I'm like, oh, we've got like all the same like issues in a way, right? The anxiety and the this, do you know what I mean? You can like tell. So it's just so nice. And I don't know if you found this too, but to find your people all over the world, not constrained by where you happen to live.
It's true. It's true. And but we all have those same struggles, like making yourself a priority or all the things that you talk about on the online magazine that features the essays written by the authors who appeared on your podcast. And it's great to have a reminder of all the things we don't have time for, because without these things, what are we living for?
Exactly.
And it needed to be said. People's relationships have been deeply affected during this pandemic, and new relationships have been created. It's just so interesting to see how all these things are unfolding. But these very things that we don't have time for are the things that keep ourselves sane. How important is it to make yourself a priority and make time for yourself?
Yeah. No, you said it exactly right. Like, I mean, I that's like, what, without these things, what is life? I mean, we're going to miss the whole thing.
This episode of Shot at Love is brought to you by Akal Chai Rum. Akal Chai Rum is the world's first botanical rum, recognized by the government of Trinidad and Tobago as having the first new production process for rum in over a century. Akal Chai Rum is an officially protected trade secret, only the second such protected process in the Caribbean since the famed Angostura Bitters by Don Carlos Seagert in the 1870s. Akal Chai Rum is available in 44 U.S. states on chairum.com, also available in the Republic of Ireland on stuffyouneed.ie. Try some today.
So,
and I think the pandemic has knocked fun out of us. Gretchen Rubin, who is the author of The Happiness Project, wrote in her essay, Read More Books, having fun makes it easy to follow good habits. When we give more to ourselves, we can ask more of ourselves. Yet, it's all too easy for fun to get pushed aside by other priorities. How have you made time for reading while you continue to save the literary world?
How have I made time for reading? I mean, I read all the time. How have I made time for other stuff? I mean, I read really, really quickly. And the more I read, the faster I've been getting.
That's good.
So,
the more you do, the better you become.
Yeah. And I don't read the way I used to. The way I read is different. I don't skim necessarily. I mean, it's like a speed reading almost.
You're going to have to teach me how to do that.
A whole book in two. I can do like a whole book in an hour or two and totally get all I need.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So, and you know, literary fiction, I'm not going to get every beautiful sentence, but on a book, I guess it's also, I read different books differently in different ways. So a beautiful work of literary fiction. I just started this book about, I can't remember what it's called, but it hasn't come out yet. It's about a woman who basically sits and watches the fox all day. But it's like, it's beautiful. And I'm like, okay, for a book like this, I will really read slowly and carefully about 50 pages, because that will give me like the depth and the texture and the wording and like that. Those beginning pages are like the more important, 50 to 100 pages or so. And I'll read them really slowly and savor them. And then I can like skim through the rest, because I'm going to get the crux of the book that way. And a nonfiction book is different because it has like different sections or different subheads, or a book of essays. I'll read over the course of 2 months, right? An essay a day. I'll just like, and then over time it will be finished. So I don't know. I guess I just like approach each book differently. And I have a lot of books going at every time.
That's fascinating to me, because I don't think I could do that, but I'm going to try it. I want you to be my coach, because I want to get up to more podcasts a week, and I just can't do like be researching like I'm creating like a Pulitzer Prize here or something. You know, it's just, it doesn't need to be that hard, I feel like. And there's a lot to be learned from you. So I'm so grateful for this conversation.
Carrie, also at the beginning, I read every book, every word of every book, and I did one a week. And even that felt like a lot for me.
So you can build up to it.
And then I used to prepare all my questions ahead of time and write tons of notes and tons. I would type out all the quotes I wanted to reference. And after I did that, like, I don't know, 200 times or something, I realized I didn't need all that. I didn't need to type it out. Like, I could just have conversations. So my prep became faster, but my interviews became better. So
that's good.
I guess it's just like practice. I just kept doing it, right? That whole like Malcolm Gladwell hours of practice, whatever. I mean, I've done, 600 times 30 minutes? That's a lot of time.
It's a lot of time.
To be podcasting. So yeah, I didn't start out this way. I didn't start out and say, I want to do like 5 to 7 podcasts every week, but you build up to it after you get a lot of practice.
That's good, because it gives me hope, you know, but I think we don't give ourselves enough credit. You know, my boyfriend, I was saying like, look at her bio, my God. And he was like, have you read your bio? You know, it's funny. Like we do things and then we don't give ourselves credit for some of the things that we've done. So
no, I read your bio. You seem amazing. You've like taken pictures of like a bazillion people and won all these awards and like whatever. I don't even,
thank you.
You're your own like pioneer, and you're podcasting and you're writing and you're doing all this stuff. So, I mean, that's pretty awesome.
Oh, thanks. I never knew that I could write, but writing is storytelling. And so if you can tell a good story, then just put it down into words. And I never realized how important storytelling was until I started this podcast. And Rima Zaman, and if I pronounce someone's name.
Zaman. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In her essay, Dystopian Fiction is Made for This Moment, she wrote, the lens of storytelling is like sunglasses. Without story, my eyes burn from the glare of the world.
Mm.
I know during this, I was beautiful, beautiful. Anything that with the word lens in it, I'm gonna love anyways. But it's like, how many different ways can we use the word shot or lens? I know during this pandemic, a lot of people aren't in partnership or their relationship is falling apart. Loneliness is at an all-time high. How invaluable was reading for you in escaping the feelings of loneliness?
I mean, very important. I mean, it. When I got divorced, I was like, I had a really, really hard time on the weekends where my kids went to my ex-husband and my house, which was normally, you know, it's normally loud and bustling and everything, that it was suddenly so quiet and empty. And it's really a shock. It's just such a shock, this empty nest out of nowhere type of thing. Anyway, I was having a really hard time with it. And I remember sitting on my therapist's couch back when I made time for therapy, which I no longer do, which is really stupid. But anyway, and she said, you know, if you have a book, you love to read. She's like, if you have a book, you'll never be lonely. And I think about that all the time. And whenever the house feels empty on one of those weekends, or I'm missing them, or I'm just like feeling that, you know, something heavy pressing against my chest feeling, I pick up another book and I'm out of my head, which is great.
And that's the key.
Yeah.
Is getting out of your head. Which leads me to this next question. In the essay Racing Against Time. Oh, it was your essay. I was like, who's the author in your essay, Racing Against the Coronavirus? How working out is keeping me sane. You wrote, all I can do is keep my head down, try to find meaning in the world by helping others, particularly those in the literary community, and pray 1 hour at a time, minute by minute, mile by mile. I thought that was like, wow, so powerful. Into the unknown. We all want to find a glimpse or just a moment of joy, or to simply feel better. How have you relied on exercise during the quarantine?
At the beginning, I was doing a lot of running. After a while, I was home with four kids and my husband for like 9 weeks without seeing another soul. I did not have a lot of time to work out, like everybody else. And, I shouldn't say that. That's a lie. Cause I did give the kids to my ex every other weekend and whatever. I guess, as you've seen, I can make lots of excuses about working out. When I do it, I love it. I love to play tennis. So, Kyle and I play tennis a lot as exercise, but I don't even consider that working out. That's just like fun for me. And then every so often I run and I do the Peloton bike. I just got into that. So I don't know. I used to be a huge exerciser. I used to be pretty athletic and played on all sorts of teams and stuff. And now I don't know. I've never been less on a workout kick than I have been. I've been off the workout kick for this past year in a bad way, and I need to get back on it. I'm just like out of the habit. Everything else seems to take precedence all the time. I put it at the very, very bottom of my list. It's not even actually on my list. So it doesn't get done. I really just need to put it back on the list.
Right. But you do things for yourself, which, you know, you read a lot and you enjoy your podcast. And I think during this time, it's like, do what you can. Do what you can to keep your head above water and do the best for the people that you love. And I think I know myself, all the type A and all the things kind of have gone by the wayside because a lot of people are just in survival. I think we have to just give ourselves the grace and say, just like you wrote in that essay, you know, I'm just going to do minute by minute.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot there. That's why everyone needs to buy your book. So my last question is, I know your ideal day would be to sit down and read a book cover to cover. Do you, and I'm sure a lot of people have always asked you this, do you have a favorite book of all time?
I do not have a favorite book of all time. I can't pick just one. That's like impossible. I can't. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'll say that I've read a few lately that I actually did what you just said, like Britt Bennett's The Vanishing Half. I literally sat down and read the whole thing cover to cover until the sun went down. And I had to like finish reading in the dark by my flashlight of my iPhone because it was so good. And I did the same thing recently with American Daughter by Stephanie Thornton Plymail, which was so good. It was just amazing. And also Lily King's Writers and Lovers. I read that all in one fell swoop. So those are some recent ones that I just could not put down.
Oh, that's good. I'm going to have to look all of these up. My Tinder tips are going to be inspired by your love of reading. And I think that will be a fun way to end this. Zibi, thank you so much for your time today and sharing all your helpful tips. Everyone needs to go buy Zibi's new book, A Quarantine Anthology, Moms Don't Have Time To. Can you tell us where the proceeds are going and how people can follow you and purchase your book?
Yes, the proceeds are going to a charity I set up called the Susan Felice Owens Program for COVID-19 Vaccine Research at Mount Sinai Medical Center, where I am on the board, Mount Sinai Health System, I should say. My mother-in-law passed away from COVID after a six-week sort of horrific battle at the end of August, and she should not have died. She was only 63 and in great shape. And I still can't believe she passed away. So I'm donating all the proceeds to COVID research, and Mount Sinai is developing a vaccine that will be used for developing countries, which is administered in one dose through the nose and is a much lower cost solution that can be stored at higher temperatures. So they're going into human trials now. And I'm really hoping that the vaccine that I'm supporting helps spare families some of the trauma that I saw firsthand this summer. So that's where the proceeds are going. And then they can buy my book anywhere books are sold. Amazon, bookshop.org, your local independent bookstore. And they can follow me. My website is zibiowens.com. My podcast is Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. And I also have a podcast called Moms Don't Have Time to Lose Weight. And I have a publication on Medium called Moms Don't Have Time to Write. So if anybody wants to submit essays, we're always looking for great essays. It sounds like you should write one. So please submit. And I'm on Instagram at Zibi Owens, and then lots of other Instagram accounts for all my different things that I'm doing. But at Zibi Owens is my main account.
Okay, that's great. I'm so sorry about your mother-in-law and Kyle's grandmother. And it's tragic. Like you said, it just shouldn't have happened. And it's wonderful what you're doing to raise money. And I admire you for so many reasons. You are a true inspiration. And you don't stop giving back and making a beautiful difference in this world.
So,
everyone should, you know, stay tuned for the three new books you're launching soon.
Yes. Yeah, I have two children's books coming out soon too. So
great.
Yeah.
And I can't sing the praises for your new book that just came out this month. It's just amazing. And I'm going to be purchasing it for lots of friends.
Oh, well, I'm so glad that you had me on and that our paths crossed. And I want to read the stuff that you are writing. It sounds like you have a really great book in you. And I look forward to hopefully reading it and eventually having you on my podcast.
Oh, that's a goal. That is a goal. And I know, well, I certainly would love to photograph you someday in the future, which is my main talent.
I know that's your day job and all, but and yeah, sure, that sounds great too.
But I love, so you're always encouraging people to write, you know, and to try, and it has been a real healing process for me and something that I've actually loved. So yeah, someone needs to write a book that moms don't have time to date.
Okay.
Or maybe an essay about that. Yeah. So, well, thanks for your time today. And I really enjoyed our conversation.
I think now you just like sparked that whole thing. I'm like going off on all the ways that I could do that. Okay. I'm adding to my list of things to do.
See how we inspire each other?
Exactly. I love it.
So good. Awesome. All right. Thanks, Zibi.
All right. Thanks. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And for now, this week's Tinder tips. In honor of Zibi's love of reading, these tips are inspired by her. Number one, maximize your time. Just like you can read a few pages here and there, you can open up a dating app and chat with a few new people. Number two, if you're feeling lonely, pick up a new book. I highly recommend Zibi's new quarantine anthology, Moms Don't Have Time To. Number three, if you're suffering through a breakup, some of my favorite books are by Natalie Liu, Mr. Unavailable and the Fallback Girl, The No Contact Rule, and The Dreamer and the Fantasy Relationship. Number four, if it's time to move on, buy Jill Shear Murray's book, Big Wild Love. I hope you found some of my tips helpful this week. This is what Shot at Love is here for, to help you find love. Keep up the commitment to yourself and commit to helping someone else by sharing this podcast. I want to thank BeatSpot for naming Shot at Love one of the best dating podcast on the planet and a must follow in 2021. If you like this show, please subscribe and review. I'm Carrie Brett, and we'll see you next time.